She spit the words out with equally fevered disdain. I don't need help.
Apparently you do.
Miss Davidson's chin lifted. Remove yourself from this house right this minute.
I will not,
came the staunch reply. Mac shifted his weight, uncertain to trust this turn of events. Were they so angry at each other that they had forgotten about him? He didn't think that was a possibility. Women were very canny about being able to perform more than one task at a time. However, they eyed each other with the air of avowed enemies. And the dog had stopped barking. He stood between the two women, his tail wagging. The unwelcome Mrs. Bosley brought her broom to rest on the floor.
I must see the magistrate, she announced stiffly. Once I've seen him, then I will leave, but not a moment until.
Her voice shook as she spoke, and Mac noticed for the first time her nose was pinched, and her eyes red-rimmed from crying. He felt rather sorry for her. Miss Davidson didn't.
Once you've seen him, haven't you been with him enough? Can you not bear a moment apart from my father? I must see him, Mrs. Bosley announced dramatically, before throwing her broomstick to the floor where it bounced on the wood floor.
She went running out the door, shouting,
Richard! Richard, please! I need you, Richard! I can't bear to be without you!
Miss Davidson put down the bowl she'd been holding and charged after her.
Where do you believe you are going? Come back here! Come back here right now! This is not your house!
And Mac found himself alone in the kitchen. Footsteps pounded up the stair treads. Miss Davidson snapped unheeded orders for Mrs. Bosley to remove herself from these premises. The older woman kept calling for Richard in the voice of the lovelorn. The dog had followed them, barking his opinion. Mac could leave the house now. No one was paying attention to him. However, if he did depart, he might miss more of the entertainment, and he discovered he was enjoying himself. It had been a long time since he'd felt so engaged in life. He had no doubt that Mrs. Bosley was calling for Richard Davidson. He was curious as to why Miss Davidson was adamantly attempting to throw the woman out of her house.
Ah, yes, the mysteries just keep growing, he murmured.
And he found he was interested in knowing which one would win. His money was on Miss Davidson, although the power behind Mrs. Bosley's broom swing was a testimony to her determination as well. So, instead of going out the back door, he followed the hallway to where a lively battle was being fought. Miss Davidson stood halfway up the stairs, her body stiff with outrage.
You have no right to be going through this house!
Richard! Richard! Mrs. Bosley cried, sounding half mad with anguish to the noise of doors opening and closing. Mac leaned on the banister, resting his chin in his hand. These were two very passionate women. Miss Davidson started up the stairs, stomping on the treads as if to promise a reckoning once she placed her hands on Mrs. Bosley. She was precluded from her actions by the older woman's appearance on the top step. Mrs. Bosley had torn her bonnet from her head. She held it in one hand by the ribbons, while her other hand rested on her temple as if her head was splitting with pain. She weaved back and forth as she begged.
Where is he?
Miss Davidson pulled up short.
Where is he?
She repeated with disbelief.
He's been with you since last night.
With me?
Mrs. Bosley dropped her hands to her side in surprise.
Since last night?
Miss Davidson's response was a bark of disbelief.
You don't have to pretend, she said, her words wounded and strangely affecting. You have won. He's chosen you over his reputation, his honour, his responsibilities.
You believe your father has been with me?
Mrs. Bosley counted, as if wishing to perfectly understand the accusation against her. Crossing her arms tightly against her chest, Miss Davidson did not reply, but studied a point on the staircase that was of interest only to her.
He has not been with me, Mrs. Bosley said. I haven't seen him since you and I had our little tiff at the ladies' quarterly meeting.
It took a moment for Miss Davidson to process this information. Her brows came together, then her head shot up.
You have not seen father?
Mrs. Bosley shook her head so vigorously, several pins dropped from her hair, upsetting her style.
Since before the luncheon? Miss Davidson prodded.
The night before, Mrs. Bosley added for clarification. I was expecting him last night. You can imagine I had a few matters I wished to discuss with him. You spoke to him, didn't you?
Now Mrs. Bosley was the accuser. You told him about our conversation.
I did, Miss Davidson admitted stoutly. As well I should. And then he left the house, and he hasn't returned since.
Are you saying he did not go to you?
That is exactly what I'm saying. I have not seen him. I expected his visit, but I've had no word or sight of him. And considering how upset you were when we spoke, I assumed he'd avoided me.
Miss Davidson shook her head.
Well, if he wasn't with you, and he hasn't been with me, where is he?
It was at this point that Mac felt he could offer something to the conversation. He cleared his throat, gaining their attention, and announced,
He might be dead.
The idea had just occurred to him, but considering the events that had ruled his life, and that Davidson had helped orchestrate his escape, the possibility was real. Both women started in surprise. Mrs. Bosley practically came tumbling down the steps to stand on the same stair tread as Miss Davidson.
Dead?
She repeated, her hand rising to clutch her dress at her heart. Mac rested his elbow on the newel post and nodded. The staircase was made of good sturdy wood, and not ornate. In fact, everything in his house spoke of a simple, humble life, and not the home of the sort of Captain Sharp who would patronise the Rook's Nest, as Davidson had done.
Yes, he informed the women. Richard Davidson could be dead.
Mrs. Bosley was ready to come undone. She began drawing big, shuddering breaths, but Miss Davidson had enough spirit to challenge him. She came down a stair.
What makes you say this?
Because he apparently was playing with some nasty fellows, Mac answered.
My father would not consort with anyone disreputable, she informed him.
Did he consort with the Reverend Kenyon? Mac asked. Because I fear there is a strong possibility the good Reverend might also be dead.
Dead? Miss Davidson repeated.
Yes, shot.
What is this man talking about, Miss Davidson?
Mrs. Bosley demanded shrilly.
Why is he here anyway?
Miss Davidson shook off her companion's questions. She came all the way down the stairs so she could stand eye level with Mac.
The Reverend Kenyon has been missing for several days. Why do you believe he is dead?
She asked, her voice calm, the gaze of her blue eyes intent as they met his. This woman was a cool player, a good one to have on one side in a fight, but he'd learned that when she had attempted to scratch the eyes out of his head. And whatever was going on between her and Mrs. Bosley was of little consequence at this moment. She truly was concerned for her father and wanted answers.
I heard the shot that might have killed him, Mac said. I stumbled over his body, and he did not respond.
Are you certain he is dead?
No. I started to check and was waved away by another man. I had the impression he would take care of the Reverend. After all, I was trying to escape from the jail and was not in a position to linger, even though the Reverend Kenyon had been helping me with my escape.
Escape from the jail? The Reverend Kenyon?
Miss Davidson considered him a moment, as if she didn't believe his story. Mac could understand her doubt. Meanwhile, Mrs. Bosley gripped the hand railing and rocked with the drama of an actor in a Greek tragedy.
Oh, dear. Oh, Richard, she whispered. Oh, Lord.
Mr. Enright, who are you? Miss Davidson asked.
In that moment, he had an irrational urge to kiss her again. She was just that delightful. Most soldiers lacked her single-mindedness, a trait he valued, and he couldn't help but wish to draw this moment between them out. Her directness was refreshing, and she had saved his life in more ways than she could imagine, he realised. He was actually enjoying himself.
I'm a man who came here to confront your father.
Because, she prodded. She deserved a straight answer. He owed her that much.
Because I'm a man wanted for murder.
Chapter 10. Of all the answers Sabrina could have anticipated, that was not one of them. She found herself staring at him, waiting for him to deny the charge. She wanted him to laugh.
You jest!
He boldly met her eye.
I wish I did.
And you were not teasing about my father's fate?
She couldn't say the word, dead. She did not want to lose another parent.
That would mean I have a macabre sense of humour, Miss Davidson, and that is not the case. I'm not certain what has happened to Richard Davidson, but I know someone put a bullet in the Reverend Kenyon.
Sabrina feared her legs would collapse beneath her. She reached for the newel post. Her hand brushed his arm. He leaned forward as if to offer support, but she pulled back, confused by the jolt of something she feared to name that shot between them. This was not the time to think of lust or to trust this man. In the kitchen, she'd almost given in to his kiss. If he'd continued one moment more, she feared what she would have done. A new thought struck her, and she wanted to bury her head in her arms. Not only had she thrown herself in the most wanton way possible at this man, she'd been intimate with a murderer. Could she sink any lower? Mrs. Bosley came charging down the stairs.
What?
She demanded in her frantic tone.
What did he say? I didn't hear all. I was too worried. Is it something about Richard?
The widow's silliness helped restore Sabrina's courage. She needed to know what he knew.
Were you the someone who shot the Reverend Kenyon? Did you murder him?
Mr. Enright frowned as if her question was ridiculous.
The good Reverend was saving my life. I'd not harm him, nor do I wish to harm your father, but I must find him. He is the only one who can give me the answers I need. Whoever shot the Reverend may be searching for him as well. That person may have found him, and that is why he has disappeared.
Panic choked her.
How do you know this?
It stands to reason. And for the record, even though you haven't asked, and I do believe it is an important question, let me state, I have not murdered anyone.
Murder?
Mrs. Bosley cried out, as if she'd been trying to make sense of the conversation and had just heard the relevant word.
Murder?
Sabrina sank to the step, overwhelmed by the turn of events. Why had she gone to the Bothy that day? Why had she let this silly goose, the widow Bosley, upset her? If she had stayed at the luncheon, then perhaps none of this would have happened. Her father would be at home, she would still retain her virtue and dignity. Of course, there would always be the widow waiting for her father to marry her. But then he might not have ever managed to have the courage to tell his daughter about Mrs. Bosley. The what-ifs swirled in her head. Sabrina now understood how people lost their sanity.
I said I have not murdered anyone, Mr. Enright was repeating to Mrs. Bosley with no small amount of irritation.
Why would someone say you did if they didn't have suspicions?
The widow challenged.
Where there is smoke, there is fire. That is what I've always believed.
Well, there is no smoke and there is no fire,
Mr. Enright shot back. Sabrina raised her head. Would you tell us the truth if you had? Are murderers honest?
Yes, he said. What do I gain in lying to you? I have killed people.
Mrs. Bosley cut him off with a shout of alarm.
Killed people?
She repeated,
then released a gut-filled cry. My Richard! My poor Richard! Stop that nonsense, Mr. Enright ordered, his voice ringing in the stairway and echoing Sabrina's sentiments.
The woman was giving her a headache with her carrying on. He confronted Sabrina.
You can trust me. I fought in the war. I was a colonel in the Irish regiment. I could give you my references, but my circumstances are a bit heavy-cavy right now, what with the sentence for hanging, and how there might be a price on my head.
A price on his head? And they wanted to hang him? I can imagine it is difficult, Sabrina muttered.
But it certainly wasn't as difficult as realising she'd allowed a condemned man to have his way with her. Oh, the gossips in the valley would have a heyday with this story. He sensed her turmoil. Leaning forward, he placed his hands on either side of the step where she sat, his eyes level with hers, those sherry brown eyes that had first sparked her interest in him.
You must trust me.
Why?
Because I'm all you have, he said in that warm accent.
Do you expect her to help you?
He asked, nodding toward the anxious Mrs. Bosley.
Help what?
The widow demanded.
Find father,
Sabrina answered, frustrated by the woman's rattle-brained worry.
Of course I'll help,
Mrs. Bosley was quick to say.
He is not looking for your help, Sabrina replied.
She had no desire to partner with the widow.
He is looking for mine. But I will help anyway, Mrs. Bosley insisted. I must.
Sabrina ignored her. Instead, she challenged Mr. Enright.
Why do I need your help? You may be behind his disappearance.
He did not balk at the accusation, but actually smiled. You know where I was when he disappeared. In my condition, do you believe I could have played a hand in it without your knowledge?
Your knowledge? Mrs. Bosley repeated. What does that mean?
Mr. Enright answered for Sabrina. It means I understand what serious trouble her father might be in.
Perhaps it would be wiser to use the law instead of you, Sabrina countered.
It would not be wise to be beholden to this man. Your father is the law, Mr. Enright pointed out. Who acts when he is not here?
The Earl, Mrs. Bosley answered.
Which means we might as well not have anyone, Sabrina said, her tone bitter, and she knew she had no choice but to accept Mr. Enright's help. It would probably take a week to make my uncle comprehend the danger of the situation. Besides, if Father is in trouble and his disappearance strongly points in that direction, then he would not want his circumstances to be bandied about.
No, he wouldn't, Mrs. Bosley echoed. We need Mr. Enright's help, she told Sabrina. He is a military man, and that is something. But I want to know, sir, why do people believe you are a murderer?
That is a good question, Sabrina agreed with no small amount of sarcasm. Mr. Enright, do you have an answer? I do, he said, straightening. But you may not enjoy what I have to say.
The only way we'll know is if you tell us, Sabrina said.
The line of his mouth flattened. He obviously did not like her attitude, but she would not apologize. She didn't want him to believe her gullible, in spite of what had happened between them earlier. He turned his attention in the direction of the kitchen. I will tell all, he said. But I must eat first. I'm starving. He didn't wait for her comment, but started down the hall. Rolf had come down the stairs and now fell into step beside him, his nails making a prancing sound on the floor. Mrs. Bosley leaned over the railing, watching him leave with some concern.
What did he say?
She asked, as if uncertain she understood. That he is hungry, Sabrina answered, and he is jolly well not going to answer any questions until his belly is full. She stood. Come, let us hear his tale.
Should we trust him?
Rolf doesn't like men, but he appears to accept Mr. Enright. However, should we trust him? Absolutely not, Sabrina replied grimly, aware that she had no choice. He already carried a very big secret of hers. A damaging one. For right now, we'll play his game. Sabrina rose to her feet and started down the hall, her shoulders back, her pride around her. Mrs. Bosley hesitated a moment, then came trotting behind her. In the kitchen, Mr. Enright had picked up the broom and was sweeping up the broken pottery pieces. He chewed on a hunk of bread he had torn off from the loaf that had been on the table until he'd taken his leap across it. Rolf was chewing too. Apparently, Mr. Enright had shared his bread with a very happy dog before placing what was left on the table. The pottery pieces swept into a pile in the corner. He set the broom aside and easily carried the tub of water out of the kitchen. What usually gave Sabrina fits, he did easily. He tossed the water out into the yard. Sabrina stored the soaps away. Mrs. Bosley sniffed the air.
Are these your soaps? She asked.
Yes. Mrs. Bosley took another sniff, just as Mr. Enright walked by. Sabrina did as well and realised Mr. Enright carried the scent of her soaps. She didn't think anything of it other than the man had obviously bathed, which was not a bad thing. However, Mrs. Bosley raised a quizzical eyebrow. She looked from Mr. Enright to Sabrina and back again. Sabrina frowned. She didn't know what conclusions the widow was forming in her hen-headed mind, but she didn't trust her. Mr. Enright lifted the lid on the pot warming on the hearth. He inhaled with satisfaction.
This is what I've been needing.
It should be mutton stew, Sabrina said.
She took a taper from the kitchen mantel, lit it off the fire, then used it to light candles around the kitchen. She set one of the candlesticks on the table. Sabrina fetched three bowls from the cupboard. Mrs. Bosley, the spoons and a knife are in that bin on the cupboard. Mr. Enright, will you bring the pot of stew to the table? Mrs. Bosley proved for once that she could be less than contrary by doing as bid, or so Sabrina had thought. She changed her mind when she surveyed the table settings. Where is the knife? Mrs. Bosley had only brought over spoons.
Do you think it is wise?
Mrs. Bosley shot a pointed glance in Mr. Enright's direction. He was taking the chairs from against the wall and placing them around the table for seating. Sabrina had fetched a small crock of butter from the pantry for their bread. She now silently agreed with the widow and pushed the butter to the side.
Of course, he'd noticed their whispering. I'm not a murderer, he grumbled.
But you are accused of murder, Sabrina stated. He grunted his frustration. Their dinner was ready.
Shall we?
Sabrina said, indicating that she and Mrs. Bosley would sit on one side of the table. Mr. Convicted Murderer could stay on the other. He had the good manners to wait until the ladies had taken their seats before sitting himself. Indeed, he had impeccable manners. Also, to her surprise, Rolf chose Mr. Enright's side of the table. She frowned at her hound and picked up the serving spoon. Playing the hostess, she passed Mrs. Bosley her portion of the stew, but as she handed Mr. Enright his bowl, she said,
Very well, sir. You have food, and we haven't gone screaming down the road. Now tell us, whom did you murder?
Chapter 11 Mac understood he was on trial here, and that Miss Davidson would be a harsher judge than the one who had sentenced him. For the past hour, she had behaved like a marionette on very tight strings. She might want to give the impression she was in control of her emotions, but her hands shook slightly, and it had to do with the unspoken between them, with what had happened in her bed. She could almost feel her fears, and he knew why. Miss Davidson was of that class of women who believed they must do everything right and proper. No mistakes allowed. She gritted her teeth as if reminding herself to be brave. She feared being vulnerable. She feared being human. He understood women like her because he'd been raised around them. He had been the male version until his brother and sweetheart's betrayal, and years in the military and learning how bloody hard it was just to live, let alone be constantly honourable. Experience had knocked that nonsense out of him. And sooner or later, he and she needed to discuss their situation. She was a magistrate's daughter. He could imagine she had some prestige in this country society. What if it became known she had consorted with the likes of him? Or, more exactly, what she thought he was? For the first since he'd learned of his brother's death and his inheritance, Mac wanted to use the title Earl of Balin. He wanted to toss it out and watch her reaction. Would it ease her mind? Or would she still regret what had passed between them? Because he didn't. He'd been lost in the depth of exhaustion and illness. His body had been battered, beaten, and weakened. And then her kiss had reminded him of something he'd forgotten over those long months in the old toll booth, that there was magic in a woman's touch. From the ancient sirens to the kiss Miss Davidson had bestowed, they all, every feminine one of them, had a gift that could restore a man's soul. When she'd so passionately given herself to him, this sweet, blessed headiness, the power of his release, had made him feel whole again. He'd slept better in those few hours after having made love to her than he had in years. She'd healed him, and her sweet body had restored his will to push forward. The despair, the grief, the sorrow that had dogged him for so long had vanished and been replaced by very intense interest in her. So perhaps he did owe her something, like his story.
I was accused of murdering Gordana Rani, he started. She was a young lass in Edinburgh with the voice of a songbird, and she was very popular. She chose to sing for her living instead of earning it in unsavoury ways. But she was with a rough crowd. After all, they were the ones who had the money.
He tasted the soup. It was warm, unseasoned, and manna from heaven could not have tasted better.
Is there something to drink?
Yes, Mrs. Bosley echoed. I could do with some whisky. It would settle my nerves.
Half of her hair was pinned. The other half was down around her shoulders. She reminded Mac of nothing more than a scarecrow that had been blown in the wind. Miss Davidson looked at both of them with impatience and with more than a hint of contempt toward the older woman. She did not like Mrs. Bosley. She obviously did not approve of a liaison between the older woman and her father. Pulling her own unpinned and slightly wild dark hair over her shoulder, Miss Davidson rose from the table.
Whiskey for you both?
Mac shook his head. Not for me. I swore off whiskey when they yanked me from my bed after a night of drinking too much of it and accused me of murder. Do you have wine? And if not, I'll be pleased with water.
His hostess arched an eyebrow, a silent warning that for this trouble his story had better be good.
Excuse me, Mrs. Bosley said to Mac as she leaned forward, but let us start from the beginning. What is your name?
Cormac Enright.
And you are Irish?
Mrs. Bosley said, her nostrils twitching with a slight hint of disapproval.
Proudly so.
Mrs. Bosley considered him a moment, then, with the right touch of slyness, said,
I knew an Irish lad once. He was a charmer.
Tell us a lad you haven't known, Miss Davidson murmured, as she placed a dram of amber liquid in front of Mrs. Bosley and another beside her own plate. Mac received water, although he could see a corked wine bottle on the cupboard shelf. He sighed and toasted her before taking a sip.
On with your story, Miss Davidson said, sitting herself and crossing her arms tightly against her chest. She had not touched her meal, and she did not touch her glass.
Gordana was well known around a gaming den called the Rook's Nest. That is where I met her. Have you ever heard of it?
I've never been to Edinburgh, Miss Davidson said.
Mrs. Bosley answered,
I have, many a time.
And did you patronise the Rook's Nest? Miss Davidson asked, an edge to her tone.
Of course not,
the older woman answered, but then smiled as she delivered a piece of information that would repay Miss Davidson for her feline testiness.
But your father did.
Miss Davidson's reaction was swift.
A gaming hell? My father would not patronise such a place.
Well, he did, Mrs. Bosley said simply.
Yes, he did, Mac echoed. He testified during my trial to it.
Miss Davidson sat back, her arms dropping to her side, her expression stunned.
And when did he supposedly do this? He rarely travels to Edinburgh and only on matters of a legal nature.
The trial was in May, Mac said.
He wasn't in Edinburgh in May.
He was, Mrs. Bosley chimed in. Miss Davidson turned in her seat to face the woman. How do you know this?
Because he told me, Mrs. Bosley answered. He said he had to go to court in Edinburgh. He was quite worried about it. When he returned, I asked if all was well. He didn't want to discuss the matter or his business, and that was, I believe, the last time he's been to Edinburgh. Of course, before then, he and the Earl travelled there several times.
A small frown line formed between Miss Davidson's brows.
I didn't know this.
Well, he wasn't in the valley.
Where did he tell you he was? Mrs. Bosley wondered.
Sometimes he was gone for several days, and in May he was there for almost a week.
He travelled to Perth quite a bit. Another magistrate in that area, Sir James, was quite ill. Father would go and help the man by fulfilling some of his duties.
Well, he may have stopped at Perth, Mrs. Bosley said.
Is it not on the way to Edinburgh?
But why would he not tell me the truth? Miss Davidson shook her head as if it did not all make sense. And why would he go to a gaming hell with the Earl? My uncle has ruined this family with his gambling. That is the last place Father would take him.
Who is the Earl we are discussing? Mac prodded.
The Earl of Tay is my uncle, Miss Davidson informed him.
Mac tucked this piece of information away. The Earl of Tay had been sitting in the front row of his trial. Miss Davidson reached for her whiskey and took a sip.
I don't understand why Father would not say something to me, she repeated.
I didn't understand why he didn't speak to you about me, Mrs. Bosley answered.
In spite of his best intentions, Richard was apparently very good at secrets.
She pulled the loaf of bread over to her and looked around for a knife to cut it.
I thought you knew about us, she said to Miss Davidson. When I found out you didn't, I knew it was not right. That's one of the reasons I had to take you aside the other day. I had given him an ultimatum. I said, Richard, you have a week to tell your daughter that we are to marry. I won't wait any longer. After he didn't say anything to you for 2 more weeks, then, as you know, I carried through with my promise. I took matters into my own hands.
She rose from the table and crossed to where the cutlery was kept and fetched a knife. She pointed it at Mac.
Leave this alone.
He shrugged. He was more interested in Miss Davidson's reaction to this news that her father might not be the moral paragon she had thought him than he was to being insulted over a knife. Miss Davidson's lips were pressed together as if holding words back. He sensed she wanted to lash out at Mrs. Bosley, but knew she couldn't. Instead, she raised troubled blue eyes to Mac. What did my father testify to at your trial?
He was the only witness, and he said he saw me beating Gordana Rani to death.
That statement sucked the air from the room. Mrs. Bosley spoke first.
If Richard Davidson said you are a murderer, then you are a murderer.
I am not. He lied in court,
Mac answered.
He would not lie in court,
Mrs. Bosley shot back, emphasizing the words with a wave of the knife.
He might not tell the truth about seeing me, but he takes the law seriously.
He would lie, and he did lie, Mac answered.
But that would mean he made false accusations,
Miss Davidson said, placing her hands on the table, her fingers curling into fists.
He would be perjuring himself, something my father is very much against, and he would be sending an innocent man to the gallows.
Now you see my problem, Mac answered. Your father is not my favourite person.
Richard would not do what you accuse him of, Mrs. Bosley stated. He wouldn't. We can't trust this man, Miss Davidson. We can't take his word over Richard's.
Miss Davidson heard her, but then, perhaps because of the bad blood between them, she looked to Mac. Was there any other evidence against you?
They presented a cloak that they claimed was mine. It wasn't. I don't own a piece of clothing as fine as that cloak was. However, it was covered with Gordana's blood.
And no one would believe you when you said it wasn't yours? Miss Davidson asked.
No, it was my word against a magistrate's and a host of unsavoury characters who swore they saw me wearing that cloak.
You say unsavoury, but is that only because they testified against you? Miss Davidson challenged.
I say unsavoury because they were gamblers, drunks and thieves, he answered.
Well, that could be a matter of opinion, Mrs. Bosley said, as if her words explained something,
but Miss Davidson sat quiet. Her face was pale in the candlelight. Her dog rose from where he'd been sitting on the floor, as if listening to their conversation. He nudged her hand. She gave him a scratch behind the ears and whispered,
I don't know what to believe.
She looked to Mac. I thought I knew my father, and now, after hearing he kept so much that was important in his life from me, I feel as if I didn't know him at all.
But that doesn't mean we should listen to this Irishman, Mrs. Bosley said. Yes, your father should have told you about our intention to marry, but the idea of Richard's lying in court is... Why, I can't even consider it.
Except he is missing, Miss Davidson replied.
I thought he'd left to see you, and you expected him to come calling. Something happened to him.
Perhaps we should reserve judgment against Mr. Enright, at least until we have father here to answer questions. She looked to Mac. But we don't know where he is.
Aye, Mac agreed soberly, and whoever shot the good Reverend Kenyon may have done the same to your father.
Mrs. Bosley began making frantic noises again, but Miss Davidson would have none of it.
Silence!
She snapped. The older woman gave a surprised start and closed her mouth.
Are you certain the Reverend Kenyon is dead? Miss Davidson said.
I heard the shot. I saw him on the ground. I started to stop for him, but the sound of the pistol drew a crowd. If I was going to escape, I could not linger. He could be alive, but where is he?
Miss Davidson thought a moment, then said, There is no evidence that father has been harmed. There is no body. He too might be alive.
That is my hope, Mac answered. He is the only person who can clear my name, and I believe he wants to do so. He may be the honourable man you both think him.
Why do you say that? Miss Davidson asked.
The Reverend Kenyon came to my cell at the request of your father. He said a friend with a conscience had sent him. He helped me escape, and someone had bribed the guards to look the other way. Of course, they were not so honourable. They sounded an alarm.
My father was one of the Reverend Kinion's benefactors.
So is your uncle, Mrs. Bosley said. Actually, the Reverend receives his living from the Earl, and Richard is merely a strong supporter of the clergy.
My uncle wouldn't rouse himself at anyone. Unless he was personally inconvenienced, he would be happy to let Mr. Enright hang. But I like to think that a miscarriage of justice would weigh on my father's conscience.
Did he seem particularly quiet or disturbed this summer?
Mac wanted to know, ready to give the man any credit. Miss Davidson shook her head. Mrs. Bosley looked at her with some sympathy.
I did not notice him being quiet. However, when he returned from his last trip to Edinburgh in July, he asked me if I would do him the honour of being his wife.
That long ago? Miss Davidson said, surprised.
Yes, Mrs. Bosley returned, stoutly. Now you know why I was growing impatient for him to say something to you.
Miss Davidson reached for her glass and drained it. Mac began to understand the undercurrent of animosity between the women. The fairest sex could be worked up over the smallest of things.
I'd take another dram, Mrs. Bosley confided. She'd made quick work of her whisky.
The bottle is in the cupboard. Bring it to the table.
Miss Davidson sounded as if the turn of events threatened to destroy her, but then she stirred in her chair as if thinking. You haven't seen Father since before the luncheon. She addressed this to Mrs. Bosley.
No, as I said, I expected him last night. When he didn't come to my door, I assumed you had raised a fuss and he didn't want to upset you, so he avoided me.
We did talk. He was very firm in his decision to marry you. We had strong words. However,
she started, as if struck by an idea, but then her voice trailed off in memory.
However,
Mac prodded.
However, he acted more upset when I mentioned that the Reverend Kinion was missing.
You told him? Mac pressed. How did you know?
Mrs. Kinion spoke to me after the luncheon. She hadn't heard from her husband and she was worried. Since she felt she isn't accepted by her husband's relatives, she asked me to say something to Father. She was hoping Father would send a letter to her husband's uncle. What was his name? It was Ebenezer Kinion. She said her husband had gone to Edinburgh at his uncle's request.
Miss Davidson shook her head.
The poor woman, I need to say something to her.
Not yet, Mac advised. We need to know more before we let her know. I wonder if his uncle had truly sent for him, or if that was the excuse he gave his wife. I am assuming your father asked him to go, perhaps as a favour, but I could be wrong.
Or you could be right.
Miss Davidson held up a hand as if to sort the chain of events out in her mind.
Father and I argued about the widow Bosley, but when we were done, he returned to his work. Like I said, he was very firm in his decision to marry her.
My Richard, Mrs. Bosley said, a sniffle coming to her. Ever true.
Miss Davidson continued without comment to her. I started for the kitchen, but before I did, I remembered my promise to Mrs. Kinion and passed on her request to Father. The news upset him. Before I knew what was what, he was out the door. He saddled his horse and left. I assumed to see Mrs. Bosley.
I never saw him.
Then where did he go?
Miss Davidson asked.
To see Mrs. Kinion?
Mrs. Bosley offered.
Possibly, Miss Davidson said. But apparently that was the last either you or I have heard from him. And he'd be home by now if he'd called on the Reverend's wife. There would be no reason for him to stay the night.
He could have gone to Edinburgh,
Mac pointed out, which was one place he did not want to revisit for a while. Out here in the countryside, word of his being wanted for murder might not have gone round. However, considering how many people in Edinburgh were anxious to see him hang, he was certain there were posters there. And there would be posters here sooner or later. It was only a matter of time.
What I don't understand, Miss Davidson said, is why Father would be gambling.
For money?
Mrs. Bosley answered.
He never has before, and we've always needed money. It must be something my uncle put him up to.
Well, he won that bit of cash against Owen Campbell's horse, Mrs. Bosley said.
You know the race, the one where Owen was caught cheating.
Yes, against my cousin's husband. Wait,
Mac interrupted.
Owen Campbell?
Yes, Miss Davidson said, confirming the name.
He owns the Rook's Nest.
The reaction from the two women was immediate.
He owns a gaming den, that sorry worm,
Mrs. Bosley said.
He is unsavoury, Miss Davidson agreed. I'm not surprised. Who is he?
Mac asked, wanting to know more about Campbell.
He is a greedy lad who grew up in these parts and supposedly made his fortune in India,
Mrs. Bosley said.
Where do you say supposedly?
He spends a frightful amount of money, and there are rumours that he isn't as well healed as he pretends, Mrs. Bosley answered.
One doesn't have a good feeling off of him, Miss Davidson confided. Then he tried to cheat over the horse race. He ran away before people could take their anger out on him.
Perhaps he didn't make his money in India, Mrs. Bosley said triumphantly. I told Dame Agatha a year ago I couldn't believe Owen would work hard enough to have made the money he spends in the Orient. I've known him since he was this tall.
She raised a hand to the height of the table.
He was a schemer then, and he's a schemer now. Any family with sense keeps their daughters away from him.
Although, if Owen owns the Rook's Nest, I'm not surprised that my uncle would search him out, and perhaps my father was trying to protect his brother.
Are you suggesting that your uncle could have killed Gurdanarani?
Mac wondered. Miss Davidson shook her head.
He is as lazy as Campbell.
Murder would call for far too much work for him. He might let her die from benign neglect, but never because of something physical.
She has a good point, Mrs. Bosley agreed before saying darkly. However, murder is in the Campbell blood. The stories they tell about them, centuries of murder.
The stories they tell about Owen, Miss Davidson agreed.
Would your father perjure himself for this, Campbell?
Mac wanted to know. Mrs. Bosley snorted her disbelief, but Miss Davidson was more thoughtful.
I honestly do not know.
She sat a moment, the wheels of her mind working, then looked to Mac. We have two missing men and no bodies. He nodded.
Beyond a gaming den, what role did the Rook's Nest play in this unfortunate young woman's murder?
She sang there, and her body was found in an alley close to it, but also in the vicinity of other places. I was staying at the Rook. They have rooms there that go cheap.
You chose bad company, Miss Davidson said.
He was staying where it was cheap, Mrs. Bosley observed.
Maybe he didn't have many choices.
Miss Davidson shook her head.
He's too well spoken to not have choices. And did you not say you were a colonel, sir?
Now it was Mac's turn to feel uncomfortable. Her direct, clear gaze was upon him.
If she had been anyone else, he would have fobbed her off. Cormac Enright didn't answer to anyone. Not when he had a mind to keep his own counsel.
Except she was different.
I studied surgery at Trinity College. I'm not completely down on my luck.
Did you finish your studies?
Miss Davidson asked.
I did.
Soldier? Surgeon, she murmured, an acerbic note to her voice. What is left to do in your life?
He could have added that he was an earl, but he kept silent on the matter.
He brought no honour to the title.
Hopefully a great deal, Mac answered, if I can manage to avoid a pesky problem of the Scots wanting to hang me.
He paused a moment, then for no reason that he could discern, he admitted, with more honesty than he had to anyone else,
I wasn't in a good place when I arrived in Scotland.
Where's that?
Miss Davidson asked. He leaned toward her, shutting Mrs. Bosley's presence from his mind, speaking as if there were only the two of them.
I'd just returned from seeing my family outside of Dublin. I hadn't been home in over a decade, and when I arrived I learned they were all gone. Dead.
Typhus took them. He stared at the table a moment, then said,
I was the prodigal son, the one who went away. I'm here to tell you, not once did I fear they wouldn't be there when I decided to return. That is a twist to the story that no one should have to live.
And you chose not to stay in Ireland?
There's nothing for me there. However, there's nothing for me here.
He made a self-deprecating laugh at his own foolishness.
The Enrights are not wealthy, hence my gram quite wisely told me I needed to earn a living.
But you didn't stay in Ireland, you chose the military.
There was a question in Miss Davidson's voice,
Mac sat back in his chair. She had a sharp mind. I was in love with a lass named Moira O'Day. That's why I went for my studies. I wanted to be a good husband to her. The hint of Ireland grew stronger in his voice as he spoke, as he remembered. When I returned home, I found she had chosen my brother. They were married and one on the way, and yet no one, not even my parents or Graham, dared say as much to me. I suppose they felt I would find out soon enough.
And so you left?
He shrugged. There was no reason to stay. I did what most other heartbroken lads do. I joined the military and went out into the world. I doctored some and fought a great deal. I was very angry.
Are you still angry? Her question surprised him. He'd been angry for a long time, even after he'd come to Edinburgh. There had always been something to rage against. The powers that be, his family's deaths, the irresponsibility of his father and brother that left the family estate bankrupt.
I want justice, he answered.
She nodded as if she understood what he wasn't saying.
And the blue devils that have been chasing me before Gordana Rani died seem insignificant now. It was a harsh way to be brought to my senses, but now that I have them, I'll keep my wits about me. I will need them to win my freedom.
And I want to find my Richard, Mrs. Bosley said, reminding him, and apparently also Miss Davidson, of her presence, because, for that exchange between them, their connection had been strong enough for everything else around them to fade in importance. Well then, Miss Davidson said, we need to talk to the two men involved in this who are here in Aberfeldy, my uncle and Owen Campbell. Which one of us will talk to them? Mrs. Bosley said. We can't all go. Won't they look suspicious if they have something to hide? Us, quizzing them.
But it would be perfectly reasonable for Miss Davidson to make inquiries after her father, Max said. Chances are the Earl and this Campbell know he is missing. They may be looking for him as well.
Or they may not, Miss Davidson replied. I spoke to my uncle today. He didn't seem concerned. He suggested I check Mrs. Bosley's bed. Mrs. Bosley smiled, unbothered by the suggestion. Mac decided he liked the woman. She was overwrought at times, but not without just cause. And he knew he was very attracted to Miss Davidson, definitely intrigued. He caught a sidelong glance. Mrs. Bosley slid to him. She had read his feelings accurately as well. Yes, when she wasn't giving way to hysterics, she was a wise old bird. Both men could be completely innocent, Miss Davidson pointed out.
They could, Mac agreed, but he doubted it.
Miss Davidson's description of the Earl of Tay had been at odds with his memory of the man. He remembered a very sober lord who had been intensely interested in how the trial had played out. Had Richard Davidson lied to protect his brother? Brothers were known to stand up for each other. That hadn't been true of him and Lorcan, but other families were different. Of course, he wouldn't share his suspicions with Miss Davidson, not when she was kindly doing exactly what he wanted her to do. You will speak to your uncle on the morrow, Mrs. Bosley said, directing her comment to Miss Davidson. Of course. What time? I learned today the Earl isn't up before 1, Miss Davidson said. So I shall go then. Mrs. Bosley brought her hand down on the table as if brokering a deal. Good. She rose from her chair. I will be waiting for you at the Crossroads Bridge to hear your report. I'll be too anxious to cool my heels waiting here or at home. You come directly to that meeting place when you are done. It is on the way, Miss Davidson said, and added with a touch of confusion as the older woman moved toward the door. Where are you going now? I'm going home, Mrs. Bosley said, feeling her head and realizing her hair was unpinned. What did I do with my hat? Oh, yes, I left it upstairs. It fell on the floor. She started out the door. Miss Davidson jumped to her feet and called her back. Wait, you are leaving? Oh, yes, Mrs. Bosley said. Don't you believe I should? After all, we can't let whoever has Richard think we suspect something. We must carry on as normal. Mr. Kerr is coming tomorrow to fix my back step. He is expecting me to be there, especially after I told him how anxious I was to have the work done. But what about Mr. Enright? You will take him with you.
Mrs. Bosley pulled back as if astounded at such a suggestion.
Of course not. We need to keep him hidden. Am I not correct, Mr. Enright?
Mac nodded. I don't think it wise we let whoever took your father know I'm in the area. He might see it as a threat. However, I will interview the Earl of Tay with you on the morrow.
Exactly right, Mrs. Bosley said. Protect her. However, I can't ride with him in my vehicle all the way to Borlick. Someone will see him and make a comment, especially if he's with me.
Mrs. Bosley said, you know how the gossips adore keeping track of my comings and goings.
Then what do we do with him? Miss Davidson asked.
A smile came to Mrs. Bosley's lips, a secret smile, as if she divined there was tension in the air around Miss Davidson and knew the reason. Nor did she seem unhappy as she answered,
why, we leave him here,
with you.
Chapter 12.
Here?
The word exploded from Sabrina.
Absolutely not. He can't stay here.
Why not?
Mrs. Bosley asked, aware that Mr. Enright appeared engrossed in every word, and having a suspicion why, Sabrina lowered her voice to say,
it would be unseemly.
Certainly the widow could see that for herself. Or had she sensed that Sabrina had fallen from grace, that her virtue no longer mattered? Well, she'd given in to desire once, but only because it had snuck up on her. She'd not known what to expect, and Mr. Enright was an attractive man, very attractive. Something about him drew her to him. She liked looking at his strong features and the way his expressions crossed his face. She noticed the slightest movement of his fingers and the strength in them. Those fingers had unlaced her and stolen their way beneath her skirts, something she remembered all too well, and had liked far more than she should for her own good. Yes, she'd liked their coupling, and she mustn't. He was exactly what she'd feared, the wrong person for her. Her father would not approve, although right now they needed Mr. Enright to find him. That was the common sense of the matter, and it also turned out to be the logic Mrs. Bosley used. The widow's expression grew grave.
I beg your pardon, Miss Davidson, but are you saying that protecting your reputation from gossips is more important than your father's life?
Well, you see, Sabrina started, then stopped, realising there wasn't anything she could say that would vindicate herself. Her protest wasn't just that she was a single woman, although past the prime of her life, but it was this man she objected to, and if she said that, then Mrs. Bosley would want to know why. And what could Sabrina say? That he'd already had her, and had her thoroughly? Oh no, no one must ever learn what had happened between them, especially Mrs. Bosley. If they found her father, and he was well, Sabrina was fairly certain he would not change his mind about marrying the widow, and her position would be more precarious than before. Her father would protect her as his unmarried daughter, but as his soiled unmarried daughter, well, Sabrina wasn't certain his goodwill extended that far.
You need to shelter him, Mrs. Bosley decided, as if she had been named queen.
What about Mrs. Patton? What will she say when she sees him here and father nowhere around?
Does she know Richard is missing?
No.
Then you've managed to keep it a secret this long, the widow said. You can continue in the same manner. Mr. Enright, you have a responsibility as well. Keep quiet. No one must know you are here.
Understood, he said,
his deep voice giving that word many shadings, including that of laughter.
Then we are agreed, Mrs. Bosley pronounced, and started down the hall, muttering about how she wondered where she had left her hat.
Sabrina whirled on Mr. Enright.
She did not trust his look of amused interest.
I have no doubt you wouldn't want to stay here, she said, hissing on the word stay. But you can't. It isn't right, and you know it.
I haven't said a word, he answered,
but his eyes danced with 100 different devils. Oh, yes. He was very aware of her predicament.
You don't have to, she assured him. I know you think you are the cat who has found the cream, but you haven't. Do you hear? What happened was a mistake between us.
What was a mistake?
Mrs. Bosley asked, appearing in the doorway. She held her bonnet.
I found it on the stairs. What a ninny I am. I could lose my head if it wasn't fastened to my neck. Nothing,
Sabrina said, forcing a smile.
Nothing was a mistake.
Mrs. Bosley pushed pins into her hair and set her bonnet on her head before starting for the back door, as if all was decided.
Very well, I shall see you on the morrow. Mr. Enright, better clothes would do you good. Aren't there some old clothes of your father's in the attic, Miss Davidson? Richard tells me he once had more heft to him than he does now. Mr. Enright is not staying here, Sabrina reiterated, following the widow to the back door. It would not be seemly, and my father would not approve if he knew you told him to stay here. She threw that last out as a particularly potent threat.
That suggestion did cause Mrs. Bosley to pause, but only momentarily.
Your father will be happy when we manage to free him from wherever he is, Missy, she returned.
She lowered her voice to add,
And if it is your virtue you are worried about, you might rethink that. You may not have a good eye, but I do. That is a fine-looking man in any woman's book. He could do far better than you, so I'd make the most of it.
He is accused of murder,
Sabrina felt she must remind her.
The things you worry over, the widow murmured, and on that pronouncement she was out the door, Rolf trotting behind her as if serving as her escort.
I'll see you on the morrow, she threw over her shoulder cheerily. Richard will be proud of us.
She walked across the moonlit yard to where she tied up her horse and gig. The woman was incorrigible. Sabrina was so angry at being dismissed in such a rude, cheeky manner, she swung her fists in the air in frustration. She did not want Mr. Enright under her roof. She did not want to see Mr. Enright, or talk to Mr. Enright, or breathe the same air as Mr. Enright. It was fine to be around him with another person, but not alone. Suddenly the house was small, too small if she wished to avoid him, and she could feel his presence behind her. Pivoting, she found him standing in the hall outside the kitchen. The light from the kitchen had turned his foreboding presence into a silhouette.
Well, there was no time like the moment to let one's expectations be known.
Sabrina squared her shoulders.
I don't trust you.
You would be foolish if you did, he answered,
sounding all too reasonable. What happened between us will not happen again. He crossed his arms.
That sounds like a challenge, Miss Davidson.
It isn't. It is a fact.
She sounded crisp and in control of her emotions. She began walking, with the intention of moving right past him and fetching a light from the kitchen before escaping upstairs to her room. Her bedroom door did not have a lock, but she would push a dresser in front of it. If she kept her step quick, she'd be done with him. But just as she pulled up abreast of him, he put out his arm to block her way into the kitchen.
What did happen between us earlier today? He asked.
Sabrina's heart gave a leap.
Could he not know?
Nothing, she said, the word surprisingly easy to say. In fact, she sounded almost too happy to say it.
Brown eyes studied her, then he murmured,
Your father isn't the only liar.
Indignation bristled through her. He was right.
However, no one would fault her for trying to put the disagreeable incident from her mind, except it hadn't been disagreeable, not completely. Not at all, if she was honest.
Of course, parts of what had happened between them had been odd and a little unexpected. So different from animals mating. Better and more involving. And standing beside him right now, even with him wearing the scent of her perfumed soap, she knew why. He was masculine in a way that made her feel feminine. She'd never been so aware of a man before. Why, she'd even noticed the laugh lines around his eyes, and she found the way his mouth moved fascinating. He was not good for her peace of mind.
I don't answer to you, sir, she managed to say. And if you wish to keep from having a noose around your neck, you'd best be respectful.
She almost cringed when she heard those words come from her mouth. Instead of sounding firm, she sounded self-righteous. He hadn't lied them either. His jaw tightened, and a golden glint in his eye warned her she'd best consider her tongue. He might be a convicted murderer, but he had a lord's own pride. Then again, anger would keep a wall between them. She decided to beat a hasty retreat. She ducked into the kitchen and picked up a candle and holder. He still stood in the hallway,
However, this time, he didn't block her path when she moved past him. Yes, anger was a good barrier between them. She said, "You will sleep down here. I'll fetch a blanket." She charged up the stairs, holding a hand around the flame of her candle to protect it. She didn't breathe until she reached the safety of the hall, and then she released a sigh of relief. She was safe. Mr. Enright had a strange effect on her. She didn't think clearly around him, possibly because she was so disappointed in herself. Yes, that was it. Her jangly nerves were about her doubts, her fears. But she would prefer to suffer in silence and discuss anything with him. If he stayed downstairs, and she shut the door to her room and maybe pushed her dresser in front of it, she could sleep peacefully. And she was tired. Sabrina felt drained of all energy. She needed a moment to regroup and reevaluate. Of course, the mussed bedsheets were a graphic reminder of what she'd done. Her eye fell on the razor and soap that she'd used earlier on Mr. Enright. They were an eyesore in her feminine retreat. She picked them up and marched to her father's room to return them to their rightful places on his washstand. She turned and almost dropped the candle she held when she realised that Mr. Enright stood in the doorway. "What are you doing here?" she demanded.
"I followed," he said.
"I gave you instructions to stay downstairs."
"I didn't want to wait," he answered.
Sabrina thought her nerve endings would sizzle from the heat of her temper.
"And so you thought to creep up behind me?"
"I didn't creep. I walked."
"I didn't hear a footstep."
"Well, maybe I'm lighter on my feet than you are."
"Especially if you didn't want me to know you are there."
He made a sound as if she spouted silliness. Then he horrified her by saying,
"Instead of barking at me, perhaps it might be more productive if we spoke about what happened this afternoon."
Her throat went dry, making it hard for her to whisper.
"That is not necessary."
"It is. I don't want you running.